Macworld podcast number 325 for Tuesday, October 23rd, 2012. Yes, that's right, Macworld podcast listener. I said Tuesday. Why are we a day early? Well, that's because Apple held a special event today. I'm Philip Michaels, your host. I probably should mention that. Apple held a special event. We have the two men who covered it for Macworld.com, Jason Snell. Hello, Jason.
Hi, Phil.
And fresh from a very lengthy flight on the East Coast right before we stick him back in a plane, Dan Morin is here.
Hello, Phil. I have no idea what time it is or what day it is, but it's good to be here.
But apparently you knew the way to San Jose, which is where Apple's press event was today.
I was chauffeured to San Jose. It was very pleasant.
I did ask Dan if he knew the way, though, because I wasn't sure.
We asked Siri.
Enough of this banter. We have products to discuss, many products, dozens of products, it seems, that Apple announced. Highlighted, in a way, or at least the most anticipated of which, was the iPad mini.
Can we banter now?
We can banter.
Okay.
About the iPad mini. Do you have iPad mini related banter?
It's small potatoes.
It is small. It is, you can hold it in a hand. It is lighter than the Nexus 7, which is that famous 7-inch tablet from Google and Asus. It's an iPad 2 shrunk down by a magic shrink ray into this new
thing. In traditional Apple fashion, they didn't just, you know, there are a lot of companies I think that would just cut the corners off, right, and say, all right, we're going to make this thing smaller. It's going to have, you know, all these like crappier versions of all our technology in it, and it'll be cheaper. And Apple doesn't usually follow what the crowd does in those departments. So in this particular case, it was, it's definitely more comparable with something like an iPad 2 than with either a third or a fourth generation iPad. We'll get to that. But it's also a really carefully designed device. It's clear that they put a lot of time into it, and they made a point of how it's better in a lot of ways when you stack it up against something like an iPad 2. And they certainly, you know, tried not to skimp on a lot of the factors like, you know, it's got better cameras than the iPad 2 did at the time, right? Because you couldn't necessarily put an iPad 2 level camera in there because that camera's, you know, 2 years old.
Yeah, crappy.
So they actually spent some time saying like, well, yeah, just because this is a smaller version doesn't mean it's a cheaper version necessarily. And that was also reflected in the price, which although cheaper than, you know, a full-size iPad is not as cheap as many of the competing 7-inch tablets.
I think we'll spend some time talking about that price in just a moment. But I wanted to talk about the screen, which I understand is the same resolution as the iPad
right.
2 in essence.
And that has a major benefit, which is that all those iPad apps are already designed to run on that screen. So iPad developers don't really need to do anything to make their apps run on this new device, which has got to be a nice change after, you know, having just optimized their apps for the iPhone 5.
Right.
So
everything's a little bit smaller because it's the same number of pixels as the iPad 2 or the original iPad, but in a smaller space, right? It's
right.
A little bit smaller. It's that 8-inch screen basically instead of the 10-inch screen. And so the pixels are a little bit closer together. You can still see the pixels. It's not a Retina display. And I had a few people ask me on Twitter, you know, what's the display like? And I actually think the closest analog is the 3GS iPhone because it's essentially the same pixel resolution, same dots per inch as the 3GS in that it's a little bit more than the iPad 2, but certainly not like a Retina display. And, you know, it's not a Retina display. You can see the pixels. That wasn't the point of this product. The point was to get this product to be cheaper than the iPad and a lot smaller and lighter than the iPad. And it is that.
Right. And they did a good job of still, I think, despite it not being a Retina display, they tried to bring some of the other improvements to displays, you know, making sure that it was a bright display and it looks good. And yeah, for the most part, if you're not used to staring at a Retina display all day, then it's going to look pretty good. But if you, you know, are going back and forth between that and an iPhone 5, you'll probably notice some differences.
Before we came into the room, I went on Twitter and asked some of our followers and our listeners if they had any questions for the two of you.
That was a mistake.
Oh, boy, do they have questions. And this sort of leads into a question from Michael Cohen, who wondered why no Retina display on the iPad mini.
Well, let's see. I mean, biggest reasons, the Retina display requires a huge amount of processing power on the graphics chip. It requires a huge amount of backlighting in order to light that screen.
And battery power, thus.
And thus battery power. And if you're trying to create something that's smaller and lighter, that is going to be a problem. And it's the reason that the iPad 3 was not smaller and lighter than the iPad 2. And I think that, you know, Apple wasn't solving for that part of the equation. Apple wanted to get something out now that was as thin and light as possible, really to compete against these smaller tablets that are out there and address what might be the most difficult thing, the biggest weakness in the iPad in terms of its physical attributes, which is the fact that you can't hold it in one hand. It's just too big and too heavy for that. And this product is built to be held in one hand. And I don't think they could have built a product like that that did Retina for, you know, I think it would cost more than the iPad.
It would cost a lot because you're making something that's the same resolution as your current iPad display, and then you're shrinking it. And miniaturization still carries a cost with it. So I think you would have been looking at – you're complaining about the price tag now. I think you've been looking at an iPad that would have cost considerably more.
You both had some hands-on time with the iPad.
Yes.
What's the verdict? How do you enjoy it?
As with any iPad, I mean, you know, their motto today was every inch an iPad. And it really feels like an iPad. Like you look at it and you're like, wow, they shrunk this iPad. They put it in the dryer too long or something. But it's really like it feels like an iPad. All the apps work the way you expect them to. It fits really nice when one hand. The one thing that struck me as different from a sort of looking at it perspective, there were two things. One was the bezel. So we're used to on the iPad having like the same little, was it like an inch, 3/4 of an inch bezel around the entire side, right?
Right.
It looks very symmetrical. The iPad mini, the sides on the left and right, if you're sort of holding it in portrait, they're very thin. There's not much bezel there. So if you're holding it there, it's, you know, your thumb's probably on the screen somewhat.
Yeah, although the reasoning, I think, in holding it, I realized why they could get away with it, which is that this device is so thin and light that you can either hold it sort of on the back with your hand spread wide and fingers on either side holding it from the back, or you can literally hold it between your thumb and your index finger at the bottom, and it's light enough that you can just hold it like
right.
that. And so you don't need to hold it with two hands on the bezel on the front with your thumbs. In landscape mode, you do, and the bezel's wider there because it's too wide
right.
to hold
it in
your hand.
Very comfortable at that point.
But that's the rationale there. But it does make it look different because it doesn't have that bezel. It's not just that the screen is smaller, but they've dumped some of the bezel size.
The other thing that caught my attention was that it almost looked – when they first introduced it with the flip around from the iPad 10 to the smaller one the thickness, it almost looked thicker than an iPad. And I think some of that has to do with the angle at which that back of the case is cut. It's a little more squared off. It looks a little more like an original iPod in just the angles of it. The other part of it, I think, is just that because it's so much of a smaller device, the back casing, like just percentage-wise, I don't know if it just takes up more of it, like looking at it straight on. But I mean, if you put it next to an actual iPad, it's clearly thinner. But there is a brief moment of looking, oh, it looks a little thicker than I thought it would be.
And thinner and lighter than the Nexus 7, which is kind of amazing because
right.
that's a small 7-inch, 16:9.
And still made out of, you know, aluminum and glass and all those high-quality materials that you expect.
Yeah, and also we should say the Apple fashion colors are in full force, the current Apple color scheme, because these things have the same color scheme as the iPhone 5. The black
right.
one has a black back. It's all black metal. And the white one has the silver back. So you can make those choices.
A Twitter follower named Amjad Khan, and I apologize if I'm butchering your name, actually wanted to know if it's as scuffable as the iPhone 5.
Well, we were not allowed to kick it around.
I took out my keys and I was about to...
Oh, that's so disappointing.
I also still don't have a scuff on my iPhone 5.
Neither do I.
And I
really
don't have, and I have never put it in a case, so I can't really comment either way on that one.
There you have it, listeners. Physically flawless,
impervious. It's made of adamantium and aluminium, as Jonathan.
I've never heard of either of those things.
The another listener question. This is from Roland Melieu, asked for a comparison to the iPod Touch, and that's sort of brought to mind back when the iPad was first introduced. Everyone was saying, "Why, it's just an oversized iPod Touch," and now it really to me kind of does seem like an oversized iPod.
It's more like a small iPad.
Especially the difference because
Apple
running.
Just did revamp the iPod Touch and it looks substantially different, I think, than the iPhone does now.
The iPod Touch, you know, now has the same screen as the iPhone. The iPod Touch is the iPhone without the phone. That's what it is. The iPad Mini runs iPad apps. That's the difference. And that's an advantage for Apple because a lot of its competitors, those small tablets, are really just running phone apps. There aren't very many tablet-optimized Android apps. So the fact that it runs not iPhone apps but iPad apps at the full resolution of the iPad is that's its huge advantage. That is the thing that puts this product out there as a serious competitor to these other Android products, whether it's the Nexus 7 or the Kindle Fire, that are much cheaper and smaller, although not lighter, is that they have app problems. And Apple has lots and lots of good tablet apps that they don't have.
Also, I think from an industrial design perspective, we saw that, you know, in September when Apple released the Nano and the Touch redone, both with colors and aluminum casings and stuff, there's almost more similarities between those two and more similarities between the iPad Mini and the iPhone. I mean, to a certain extent, I think that these are being positioned as separate devices from an industrial design standpoint.
Right. They have the colors, right?
And the colors and the little wrist strap thing. And right. It's clearly, I think that's
light and
it's
fun.
Being aimed in a different direction slightly. So right. There is a distinction being made there.
Yeah, hardware and software, there are distinctions to be made.
So let's revisit that subject that we were talking about earlier, the price.
Oh, the price.
Easily the most frequently asked question from our listeners and readers, did Apple get the price right?
Wow. You know, Apple's never going to be the low price leader. That's not the game it plays. It's always trying to make a better product and you pay a little bit more for it. And, you know, we know that Amazon is selling the Kindle Fire at cost, and we know that Google and Asus are selling the Nexus 7 at cost. And Apple's never going to play that game. So, you know, them having a $199 tablet, you know, Apple's going to make their profit on the hardware. That all said, I think $329 surprised me. It feels a little high. I think psychologically we were saying on the drive back that the difference between $199 and $299 and $199 and $329,
yeah,
just even though it's only $30, it feels like that $30 really
– it's a weird price.
Yeah.
I mean, and especially from – you know, we were talking a bit about the margins, and it's like, really? They couldn't kill $30 off that and still make a profit on it? But I mean, I guess not. I mean, I guess that is the margin they're talking about right there. If they have to, you know, take it up over that $299 limit, then presumably that's what they need to do in order to make a profit on it. And you're right. They're about selling devices. They want to sell their products, and they want people to buy those products for the cost. They don't want to say, oh, you'll be in our ecosystem, and we'll get it back from you when you buy music and TV shows and that kind of stuff. They want you to pay for that device and then, you know, also pay for everything else.
Sure.
And that is why Apple is the most valuable company in the,
yeah,
in the
works.
World.
They are not a charity.
Yes.
But we're not going to know about the right pricing until we see how people respond.
Yeah, if they sell a lot of them, then it's the right price. And if they don't, then it was the wrong price. But we won't know. I mean, they're counting on it being a lower entry point for iPad ownership.
Yeah.
For people who want something smaller, like for more reading and things like that, or for kids because it's smaller. There are lots of scenarios out there. What it doesn't do is show Apple really throwing an elbow at Google and Amazon in terms of being like super price competitive with what they've got.
You're jumping on my next question.
I apologize.
Well, no, it's all right. It shows that we're following a logical progression.
Is it your next question or is it another question from Twitter?
This question comes from me.
All
this
right.
one I prepared for. I don't outsource all of my work.
All right.
Thank God for that.
As I sat watching your live blog, excellent work as always.
Oh, thank you.
So the question that I was struggling to answer was, who is this iPad Mini for? And I think it was because the price, because at $329 you're not really going for the bargain hunter. Oh, too rich for my blood crowd.
Yeah, I don't know. Does Apple sell products to the bargain hunters?
Probably not. But I mean, schools don't want to pay up.
Well, I mean, I don't know. This is not – so what's interesting about this product is it's cheaper, but it's not that much cheaper, right?
It's you go up $70 and you've got an iPad 2.
Right.
Which
is very much like
still
this.
Available.
Which is kind of old. It will not die. But yeah. But at the same time, yeah, if you already have an iPhone or, you know, and an iPad, then you're probably not looking to buy an iPad mini too.
Right.
But there are probably people out there who don't have an iPad yet because it's too expensive, because it's too big, or because they want to use it for something like – I think there are people out there who are still buying e-readers because they don't – that's what they want to do. They want to read a book. And they're like, oh, that Kindle is, you know, it's $100 or $200 or whatever, and that does what I need it to
right.
do. And so maybe there are people who are thinking, well, you know, hey, I can pay a little more and I can get an iPad. You know, my friends have iPads. That seems attractive. So there must be a niche there if they're going to try to sell into it.
It lowers the starting price for the iPad. It is smaller. I could see a market for getting this for kids. It's lighter. I mean, not everybody has an iPad, right? And it is lighter. It's more like a reading device than maybe the full-sized iPad would be. It'll be interesting to see who this is for and whether this is for – whether this is more of a gaming device for kids, or if it's more of an e-book reader, or if it's more use in education. You know, I don't know. I think it's funny. It's really funny to me that – everybody's asking the question, who is this for? Previously the question that I heard, or the statement I heard a lot, was, oh God, Google and Amazon have smaller tablets than the iPad. When will Apple finally respond? There's a huge hole in the market here. So which is it? Is there a hole in the market here and we need – and they talked with that voice.
It's for that old man.
So that's the question, right? I don't know. Which is it? Is there a market for this smaller tablet size? If there is, Apple seems to think that there is. Google seems to think that there is. Amazon seems
right.
to think
is
that
there
is.
Is there only a market? I mean, I guess what the question there is there only a market for that tablet size when coupled with a low price?
Right. Is it a cheap tablet market or is it a small tablet market?
Yes, that
reason,
is the question.
The reason that Nexus 7 is $199 is it's because it's only 7 inches. Right? Is it $199 because it's 7 inches, or is it 7 inches because it's $199? The truth may be that, you know – its biggest feature is its price and not its screen. And right. Apple is selling this as something that is a full iPad but smaller and lighter and cheaper. And I think there's probably a place for a device that's as light as the iPad mini for people who just want to read books and stuff like that. I think this is – in some ways this is Apple's – it's much more of an e-book reader than either the iPhone, which is a little too small, or the iPad, which is a little too big. Plus it's an iPad and does everything else and runs iPad app.
We had a chat with a couple of people and we're talking about – this seems like a really good device for commuters. Because if you're riding the subway or something to work every day, and well, you can hold on to the subway railing or something and hold your iPad mini in the other hand, and you can still like use it. You can put it in your pocket. It's for people with coat pockets.
Yes.
You can put it in your pocket. I mean, like it's something that doesn't
but
necessarily
not your back pocket. I tried it in my back pocket. It doesn't fit.
Your mileage may vary. But you know, something like an iPad, generally a full size iPad requires, you know, you can probably carry it in a bag or a backpack or something. You get into the subway, you got to open your bag, you got to pull it out. Like maybe you don't have a lot of room, maybe it's crowded. Something a smaller device that you can fit in your pocket. There might be people who that appeals to. But I think again, you know, let's all look at, you know, January after the holiday season's over and see how right. many people are standing around reading their iPad minis.
Right, but with so many things on the internet, you get this reaction from people that's basically, I'm not interested in this product and therefore it has no value. And the fact is, you know, lots of products are not designed for you. And I think this is one of those cases where if you're somebody who has an iPad and loves it, or has an iPhone and loves it and doesn't see the need for this, that's fine. This is not really your product.
Congratulations, Apple already has your money.
Yeah. This is a product for people who think the iPhone is too small for some of the things they want to do, or think the iPad is too big for some of the things they want to do. And Apple doesn't expect to sell an iPad mini to every man, woman, and child in the world. That's not the plan. The plan is to fill another part
of the niche of the iPad and of iOS like they did with the iPod when they expanded out to the iPod Mini.
And let's remember that people tend to replace their devices eventually, right? So it's very well that somebody who had a larger iPad, when that reaches the end of its life, might say, you know, I always kind of wanted a smaller one. You know, I think it's providing an option in the same way that they offer an 11-inch MacBook Air and a 13-inch MacBook Air.
And I think, again, I'll say, I think this is a much more likely product to buy a kid for Christmas than a full-sized iPad. And I think will make people say, well, do I want to get my kid an iPod Touch or would I rather get them an iPad Mini? And I think that's an interesting question because maybe you don't actually want them to have a little thing that they could drop and they can lose. You want something a little bit bigger that does a little bit more and is maybe a better thing for reading and web browsing and things like that.
You've kind of answered a reader question there without
Ooh,
even knowing it.
Thank you, Twitter.
Matt Tillman wanted to know if you're an iPad 2 owner, is it worth upgrading? Or side grading or grading.
I mean, again, it depends on your question, on the question of whether or not the size is an important factor to you. Because, you're not going to necessarily see like a huge you're not going to see the performance upgrade going from an iPad 2 to an iPad Mini that you would see going from an iPad 2 to a new Retina iPad.
Right.
It's going to be a much more market improvement there because those devices are far more powerful. But if the size was an issue for you, then it's going to be an advantage.
If you're like me and found the original iPad I find it kind of clunky. Find it kind of hard to carry with my spaghetti arms.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that was the original iPad was harder to hold on to, too.
Yeah, the sucker will fit in a shoulder holster for you, Phil.
Yeah, exactly. That's what... I need a small boy walk in front of me.
I think there are a lot of people for whom the iPad was too big. And that's always been its issue. And it's been it from day one that it's a little too big and a little too heavy to hold comfortably in one hand for any length of time. And some people that doesn't matter and some people that mattered a whole lot. And, you know, Apple's not saying everybody should just buy the iPad Mini, but it fills that gap. Now you've
but
got –
buy the iPad Mini.
Now you've got this wider spread of products where you've got the iPad and you've got the iPad Mini and then you've got the iPhone and the iPod Touch. And the iOS family is a little bit more has a little bit more variety. That's always been the knock on iOS, right? That Android devices come in every shape and size and Apple has really only had two. Well, now they have three shapes and sizes, triangular and the size of a pyramid.
Deal with that.
No. Now there's some more variety, and that's good. It's not going to be – it may not ever be the number one selling. It might be the number one selling iOS device. It might be the lowest selling of all of them.
But I'm going to go out on a limb here and predict that they're going to sell a bunch of them.
I think maybe they will.
Call me crazy.
So speaking of iOS devices, we have – it's not the only iPad announced today.
Weirdly enough. Who saw that one coming?
So we have the fourth generation
iPad.
Not 6 months after the third generation iPad.
Moment of silence for the third generation of the iPad.
Which is not the iPad 3, but rather the new iPad, so that makes this the new iPad.
Yes,
the newer iPad.
That's no longer – it's lost its crown as the new iPad.
Hmm. We just don't even know what to call it anymore.
So
Phil Schiller called it the fourth generation iPad on stage twice.
All right.
At least.
So we're going with that.
So what is new about this new iPad?
It's weird because I would be more tempted to call this the 3.5 generation iPad because it's in more ways than not, it's pretty similar.
Same screen.
You're not going to – if you put two of these things down next to each other, you're not going to be able to tell.
The only thing you could tell would be that it doesn't have a dock connector port anymore and it has the lightning port on the bottom.
That's pretty much it. And I think that's the big thing. Look at this. Going into the holiday season, every single iOS device that they sell has a lightning jack. Everything they sell that's not a Mac, basically.
Or the iPod Classic. Right?
They still sell that?
I guess.
So this is the whole thing on the – a month ago it was – well. Now all my accessories don't work. I only because there's this one device that uses the new connector and no one's making accessories for it. Well, all of a sudden, pretty much everything they sell in that line is using that connector. So those accessory makers better start working.
And Apple detailed how they're going to have the SD and USB and
right, which
HDMI
is a big question for all those adapters.
Right. So it's
On the inside, there are changes, though. They did a step, and people thought maybe that would happen, where there'd be a new version with a lightning connector and an upgrade to the
speed bump.
What is it? The A5X.
A6X.
It's now the A6X.
A6X. Yes. Right. Okay. There you go.
So
right,
we've almost moved into the sort of iPhone 3G, 3GS, 4, 4S. Type update, right? So this is almost
this is the
iPad 3S.
Yeah.
To totally make up a term.
No, that's really bad.
Please don't.
You already called it the 3.5.
You're just going to keep terms until
America adopts it.
Oh, damn.
So yeah, there's a lot of improvements under the hood.
Right.
We've got
processor.
Stuff like that. The broader LTE support. So this is basically the LTE chip that's in the iPhone 5 instead of the one that was in the in the third generation iPad, which was kind of stepping up there, but not
just
quite.
Limited to U.S. LTE on Verizon and AT&T. And this is world LTE. And it also has better Wi-Fi. We don't know exactly how.
Interminable way.
Or was it Phil Schiller said it's twice as fast. We don't know what that means. It probably means they've done a lot of the same things that Amazon did, where Jeff Bezos stood up on stage for like 20 minutes and told us how Wi-Fi works. And Apple just sort of had part of one slide and they blew through it and said, hey, it's got Wi-Fi and all the things and it's faster. And they moved on. But I suspect it's probably the same story. So it's, they upgraded the radios.
It's got a new FaceTime HD camera.
Upgraded the front-facing camera.
If I'm not mistaken, means that pretty much everything with a FaceTime camera now has a FaceTime HD camera.
Yeah.
All the current versions.
Except for the iPad 2.
Right. Everything. You can get the iPad 2, but you can't get the third generation iPad.
No. Yeah. Yeah.
That's why they didn't call it the iPad 3.
I'm so confused.
Yeah, clearly. So it is a half step, but it is a step.
Did you get a chance to handle the new iPad?
No.
Oh. They did have them, I think, but we did not.
I didn't.
Because I think people would be interested to hear how that performance translates.
Well, I think we're going to have to run some tests. I think that's going to be our review. We were saying our review is going to be faster and has lightning. That might be the review. So we'll do some tests when we get one and see what the speed differences are. But it's really, it's really the same screen and everything, and it's just an incremental update to get it in sync. And that opens a big question, which is iPad's always been this spring product, and I look at this and my immediate thought was, I bet they're not going to update it this spring. I bet it's now
it's
on the fall cycle.
It's always been a spring product for the last, three years.
It's in its existence, a new one comes out in the spring. That's feel like now with this and saying it's the fourth generation and putting the effort into making these changes, they're kind of saying, they didn't say it, and it's entirely possible in April they could announce a fifth generation iPad, but it wouldn't surprise me at all if it's now on the same schedule as the iPhone and the iPod Touch.
That would make all the iOS devices on a fall schedule,
which means they're all
ready for holidays.
So they can share the same radios and they can share the same set of processors and rather than what we've had with the iPad where it's like and share the same operating system,
right?
Instead of it being like off 6 months off and not having having the old processor and having the old OS support and they may have finally sort of pushed it off into the fall.
Next year we'll see our event in the fall where they introduce a new iPhone and iPad.
It's the iOS event.
Yeah,
it could be. And it's not unlike the changing of the schedule for iPhone releases, which were summer releases, and then they became summer. Fall became the new summer.
Yes.
All right.
Fall may be in the new spring, too, now.
So here's a question. I thought this question from Twitter handle Space Ace was
excellent.
Was just outstanding because it mirrored a lot of the grumbling I heard around the Macworld, Tech Hive, PC World offices today.
I was hoping for Space Ghost, but I will accept Space Ace.
Space Ace would like you to answer this question.
In the form of a question.
Is it a bad idea to introduce a new iPad and risk making customers who recently bought one unhappy?
Yeah. No, I don't.
This is a question who comes from probably, I'm going to guess, someone who recently bought one and is therefore unhappy.
Well, it's that weird thing where, again, if Apple sort of from an overridingly strategic point of view wants to make this change, they're going to tick somebody off at some point, right? Like it's just a matter of time. At some point, they're going to have to do it, and at some point, you're going to be the person who gets caught in the crosshair, and they've done this before. There's plenty of examples of I bought the first aluminum MacBook. It was a 13-inch MacBook and famously did not have any FireWire on it. And then they revamped them you know,
and
9 months later
Pro
or something, and there was – and then they had FireWire again. And so every once in a while, Apple does this weird sort of, you know, half step to the left and gets people caught in that sort of that situation of, well, I just bought one, you know,
and
what
you
happened
can,
now?
And you can never time that perfectly, because just today on another one of our social networks, Apple updates the iMac for the first time in more than a year, and someone goes, "Oh, I just bought an iMac!" And you're all, "Oh,
there's always someone who's just bought
what,
it."
What are you? Yeah. What are they supposed to do?
But I mean, six months is small. But if they want to move the schedule, then it's either the thing that they did with the 4S, right, which is
longer than a year.
Wait another 6 months so that we didn't see an iPad update for 18 months, which was, I think, is just infeasible at this point in the iPad's lifetime to wait that long while everybody else is making improvements to their tablet, or at some point to just, you know, cut it short and say, hey, we made a new one.
You know, this is what happens with technology. And the fact is that that product that you bought, that iPad 3 that you bought last week,
still works.
Works exactly as well as it did when you made the decision to buy it. And yes, if there had been more rumors about this, or knowing that this event was coming, if you had held off, you know, you'd be able to get this one that's a little bit faster. But it's not a lot faster; it's a little bit faster, and it's and it does have the old connector instead of the new connector. You may actually be able to pick up some accessories for your iPad 3 cheap now because they're going to be moving to the new connector format. But that that happens if they waited 3 months, if they waited 5 months. I mean, short of saying, "Hey, guys, everybody, we're going to just stop selling iPads and don't buy any. And then in a couple of months, we'll come out with something." And even then, people will be like, "Ah, but I bought it last week and now you're warning me." I mean,
there's no way to win. How can you win that?
It just, I mean, this
I mean, the answer is this. If you are really that concerned, sell your iPad and go buy a new one. I mean, you can probably still get a pretty good price for that.
Probably
third generation
a brand
iPad.
New third generation iPad. But you know, it's no worse than it was the day you bought it.
It is certainly not worthless as some people.
If you just want to mail it to
even
me,
even in our employ, we're saying
I will take it. I'll take it off your hands for free, and then you can go get a new one.
If you know, if the object of the game that you're playing is to always have the latest model. Then guess what? You got to buy a new one. But
I hope you have a good job too, because that's expensive.
Yeah, but if the object is I'm going to give you this money, and in exchange, you're going to give me a product that I like and that I've decided is worth my money. Well, you got that product, and now you've got it, and that's just that's how it works.
It's very funny because this is a game that we always used to play with the Mac. Oh, you know, I gotta buy a new Mac. Well, but do I wait? Do I wait until the next version that might have X, Y, and Z, or do I buy one now? And we hadn't been playing that with iOS devices because there were usually very clear delineations of, okay, every year they put out a new thing, right? They have very regular schedules, which the Mac never quite was. The Mac was always a little bit more skewed because it's a broader product line, so things would get introduced at different times. Sometimes products go for a year or two without getting upgraded like the Mac Pro. And so I think we're now hitting that point to a certain extent where the iOS devices to a certain are still big enough expenditures that people are now concerned about this. But I mean, at the same time, it's not like dropping necessarily $2,000, you know, on a new Mac, or you know, when you're spending $500 on an iPad. It's still a cost, but again, like Jason's saying, the improvements are not as earth-shattering.
And thank you for bringing up the idea of new Macs, because
there
Dan
were none.
Warren,
there
it turns
were none.
Out
it, as it turns out Apple held an iPad event and brought its Macs with it because new iMac, new MacBook Pro, new Mac Mini. And if I have to say, I found the new iMac to be the most impressive of the products Apple introduced.
I think that was the star of the show, I got to say. I know you like the Retina 13-inch too, but I think the new iMac is clearly the most substantial change that we've seen.
It's so stunningly thin. Dangerously thin. Calista Flockhart thin.
Tell me more.
Cut yourself thin. It's really – it is.
Eat a sandwich, as I said in the macro video.
It's only – you know, it's what, 5 millimeters at the edge, but it's tapered. It gets to be much thicker at the center, and that's
like,
how they can
like
fit
an original,
a hard drive.
Original iPad that's had sort of that bowl shape on the bottom.
Yeah.
But it is kind of stunning. That was my one sort of whoa moment during the presentation today when they showed, you know, this is the new iMac, because I have an iMac on my desk at home, and it's a very nice machine. It's pretty small as far as like computers go, especially if you are coming from the age of the, you know, when I had a computer
giant
10 years ago
tower.
And be like, oh, here is the tower that sits on my desk. But the new one is really very thin.
Yes, and yeah, and there's no optical drive in it anymore. So Apple tells if you would like to watch things, DVDs on your iMac or
on your Mac.
Or yeah,
name a Mac with an optical drive besides the Mac Pro, which again,
and the MacBook Pro old model still available, right?
Your days are limited.
Optical drive is being swept away into the dustbin of history now by Apple. Although they did point out a super drive, external super drive, is available. And that's – if you want an optical drive, you should buy an external drive. You know, that's just – it's gone. And that enables it to be much thinner. And I think they just finally decided is the only reason we're keeping this thing the size it is because of this optical drive. And that wasn't a good enough reason. You know, that and the spinning hard drives, which these still have because they're kind of bulbous. And even there, we found out the smaller of the two iMacs actually is using a laptop drive now. It's a 2.5-inch hard drive instead of a 3.5-inch for the as part of the Fusion drive or whatever. You know, that's the only – those iMacs still have spinning hard drives, which the laptops are.
And if you look at some of those internal schematics, just like as with the new MacBook Pros, like they're really very sparse inside. Like it's like little pieces of silicon, a couple of chips here and there.
Would we like to talk about the Fusion drive now, or are there other technical features of the iMac that deserve their moment in the podcast?
There are.
The screen is very nice. It's not a Retina display, but again, it's obviously a Retina display at that size I think would be hard to do.
And it's the glass is bonded on the screen, so like we've got an iMac here that we're recording on, and you can look in it and you can actually see that there's a couple millimeters of a gap. And this is more like on the iPhone 4 and 5 where the pixels are really up close to the front of the glass. They're actually bonded to the glass. And so that helps with glare. Plus, they have some other crazy things involving science.
Plasma deposition.
At science court, they take the plasma deposition. And that's supposed to reduce glare. We'll have to test it out. But they were saying it really is much less glary than previous systems.
That's a technical term.
Glary.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I knew a guy named Glary.
A reduction in glare. And so that was – the screens look like they're going to be pretty good, but we got to put them to the test in a true environment. We saw them in kind of a dark room where
– shadowy room with
figures. Look, there's no glare because there's no light. But
I actually was really impressed, and this was in a later demonstration in a quieter room, these speakers. I thought – I was pretty impressed with those. I mean they're not external speakers still, but – there was a moment where, because it's so thin, that's a challenge because to create good, big sound, you need air. And that is a challenge when they make the devices smaller and smaller. So they actually increased the size of the speaker cavities, I think, inside.
Yeah, those air chambers
inside. It's weird to turn on music and hear that much sound coming out of something that is so thin and small that I had to kind of look at it and be like, where is the sound coming from?
Yeah. Yeah, they did a good job with that.
It's still not a comparison. If you have external speakers, those are still going to be better. But for basic speakers that ship inside something that small, they're pretty good.
Yeah.
And newer processors.
Yeah.
Sure. Ivy Bridge, right?
We've seen a lot
faster.
Of these.
Yeah. Newer, faster.
Yeah. I mean, it's the usual. It's faster and the graphics performance has increased.
Right. They're
using NVIDIA
chip.
NVIDIA. Mm-hmm. Now and that they say is a boost over the old iMacs, which were still pretty good.
They've bumped up the bars a little bit on so it's 8 gigs of RAM across the line, I believe they said, and I believe they also said 1 terabyte of storage across the line.
Yes,
and then we could segue from the 1 terabyte of storage option
into Fusion Drive.
The most unexpected innovation,
Mr. Fusion Drive.
Ask Twitter follower Andreas.
Yeah. I mean, there have been hybrid drives before, but what Apple has done here is add software, which is very Apple to add software to hardware and make something different.
And they wanted to stress that this was not quite the same as what PC manufacturers are doing with hybrid drive, which tends to be a small cache on very fast.
And then it writes it out to the slower disk later. This is there's a chunk of flash storage and then there's the big drive.
Right. And by a chunk, we mean 128 gigabytes of flash storage, which is pretty good. Yeah. That's pretty sizable.
And then they reserve – there is a cache. There is like a 4 gig
buffer
that they also have. But it's a sizable amount. And then what's happening is the software is prioritizing, looking at your behavior of what files you're using and how you're using them. And then the software that's running and from your perspective, it's just a drive. It's a single volume, single logical volume HFS plus. There's nothing special about it at all. But that software underneath is looking at its flash and looking at its physical hard drive. And then it's saying, what is the stuff that's used more? I want to put that on the flash, and the stuff that's used less will store away on the giant
physical hard drive. So it will literally move files from flash to the hard drive or back on its own based on its kind of judgment about how you use your system. You never see that, but the end result should be that for most of the stuff you do, you're getting flash storage speeds on a drive that's got actual large sizes, because you know you can't do 3 terabytes of flash storage without taking out a mortgage.
And if you don't have, you know, if you have enough stuff that it all fits in just flash, it will just be on flash,
right? But the stuff you use the least will end up eventually just kind of getting as you fill it up, it'll get pushed
over,
off onto the slower drive.
And I think there's, you know, a lot of improvements here that are in terms of like it's kind of a midway point, right? As you're saying, it's not at the point where you can get large capacities of flash and have it be cost effective. Yeah. At some point down the road, probably. I mean, that seems to be the way everything's going, right? You can get up to 768 gigs of flash in your laptop now. I think it's not a long time before we start seeing at least a terabyte of flash, but it's still going to be expensive. That's a couple years down the road. In the meantime, here's a way to sort of marry the best aspects of both and turn it into one thing, and in typical Apple fashion, to do it hopefully in a way that is so transparent that you don't, as a user, don't have to worry about it. You just get the performance benefits.
Yeah, I mean, if you've got, you know, 700 gigabytes of videos and photos or something like that, right? Most of those you don't need all the time. And those that's what that hard drive is for. That slow hard drive is just to store lots of stuff. But the stuff that photo you're editing right now, and the OS when you boot up, you want that stuff on the flash because you are using that, and it changes your boot time from 30 seconds to 3 seconds. It's that kind of a world changing performance. You just can't afford to put it all there. So it's a really smart idea to kind of bridge the gap there and ideally make it so you feel always like you're on a system that's just made out of flash storage. And in the background, it's being very clever and kind of moving things around. So the thing that you want is always on the flash, even though all the other stuff is still stored on the disk.
And like, as Apple, I think, was saying, people use – they're looking at the differences between the way that people use notebooks and the people who use desktops. Desktops, people tend to store a lot more data. They tend to have their iTunes library and their iPhoto library and all that stuff on their desktop. So you need a little more space there, or you tend to be more of a professional user who's doing things like video editing and you need access to these sorts of things.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, it's I will be really interested to see once we run it through some tests and see how it pans out. But it's got the potential to really improve performance, because I think we have hit a point where anybody who uses a computer with a hard drive in it, that's starting to become the bottleneck. That's where you have to sit and wait for it to go and start writing stuff out to disk.
Pricing and availability not announced, or
it is. I believe I looked at it. Yeah. Hold on, it was I think another $250 to add it. Like as a price, they're all configuration options. It's a build to order.
For both the iMac and the new Mac.
I looked
Mac
at the mini particularly
yes.
because I happen to be in the market for a mini, but I believe to add it on to the base version was $250 or $200. It was a little cheaper than just like making it a sheer flash, like a total flash system, but more expensive than just adding more storage.
But you get more.
Yeah, where you get better performance. Yeah. So,
you are impressed by the MacBook Pro, the Retina display?
Yeah.
Well, why don't you tell us why?
Well, so
to me, it's just – it was impressive in June, sure, on a 15-inch model, and here it is on a 13-inch model. Boom.
Well, as somebody who likes small laptops, and Dan and I were both there with our 11-inch MacBook Airs, right?
Yeah.
The 15-inch Retina, as impressive as it is enormous.
It's a man-sized computer.
It is huge and heavy, and you could use it.
It's a computer that eats like a meal.
You could use it to kill somebody.
And I
easily.
Have.
And what I like about the 13-inch MacBook Pro with Retina is it's got a nicer price and it's lighter. It's a lot lighter. You know, they did the same thing to it that they did to the 15. It doesn't have optical anymore and it's all flash storage and yada, yada, yada. But it is... there's something about that weight. It's not as light as a MacBook Air, but it's under 4 pounds, and it's got the Retina screen. And the fact is, a little tidbit that they gave on stage, 13-inch MacBook Pro is the most successful Mac that they sell.
Yeah.
Most popular single model of Mac that they sell, I believe they said.
That does not shock me based on just people I've seen in coffee shops and all that stuff.
13-inch is the sweet spot. It's cheaper than the equivalent Air at that price.
And some people like the 13, feel like I need at least 13-inch. They don't like an 11-inch because it's too small.
Because the 11-inch is a toy for children.
children who cover live Apple events.
I would kill you with my MacBook Air, but it wouldn't even dent your skull.
I'll need
to get a Retina 15.
It's more
to
of
do
a
this.
Stiletto than a,
yeah,
than a battle axe.
Chop your arm off with yes. it. So, that's what I thought was cool about it. This is a product people are going to buy. This is the mainstreaming of Retina on the Mac in a way that I think the 15 wasn't. The 15 at this point is still expensive enough and large enough that it feels to me a little more like that the 17 inch.
Right.
It's aimed at creative professionals and people who really need the
power,
yeah. and the large screen.
And maybe it stays on your desk most of the time. This 13, it's light enough, it's powerful enough, it's got the Retina display. It'll go with you anywhere. It is rapidly moving toward being the mainstream product with a Retina display, which I think is a big deal. I think that it's going to drive use of Retina on the desktop in a way that the 15 was absolutely not going to do it. And I think it is. It's just a signpost along the way to everything Apple does being Retina, but it's a big step, and it's that convergence of the MacBook Pro with the MacBook Air, where right. I start to look at the 13-inch MacBook Air and say, okay, I see why you exist today. You're $500 cheaper, and you are lighter and thinner, but I see a day coming soon when that difference is irrelevant.
Well, we knew when we saw the new MacBook Pros, 2 years ago, whenever they announced this current set, that this is the future of the Apple's lineup for notebooks. And I think, with the 13-inch and 15-inch, we've seen how the MacBook Air design considerations play into a more powerful computer. And so, it's not hard for me, as we were talking about a little bit earlier, to envision a future where you've got an 11-inch, 13-inch, and a 15-inch MacBook, and they've all got Retina displays, and they're all really light, and they're all really powerful. And really, what else do you need at that point?
Well, you've convinced me. I was a fool not to be impressed by the 13-inch Retina display. Do we want to, other than just acknowledge that it's been updated, the Mac Mini? Anything to say about
Dan's going to buy one.
Yeah,
right?
I'm going to buy one because I'm replacing an old Core Duo Mac Mini that's hooked up to my TV. And
it's very old.
Yeah,
runs Snow Leopard.
Does it run Snow Leopard?
Quad core now.
Yeah, and so there's a lot of bang for the buck even for a $600 model. And this is a pretty typical speed bump, but it's a nice, it's a great computer. And I thought that was a really interesting tidbit that Apple told us, which was we talked to customers and it seems like it gets used for all sorts of crazy different things. Like people use the Mac Mini for a lot of different stuff. And so, some people hook up to the TV. Some people have it as their desktop. Some people they run them as servers in some places. Like it's a very versatile machine in a way that, something like the Mac Pro never really could be.
Yeah, or an iMac
right.
that's got the big screen. This is a little thing. And the recent redesign, I think it was 2 years ago that
right.
they did, where it's got the kind of screw-off bottom with the RAM accessible and all that. And it's the first major change to the Mac Mini exterior since the original. This is still using that. That's a really nice revision. It's smaller. It uses less power. There are lots of good things about it. And it's so versatile. Yeah, you can stick it. You can attach it to the back of a TV and make a kiosk out of it. We actually do that here at our office. So,
and if you look at Apple's whole Mac product line, there's been more and more of a tendency to reach these computers that are almost appliance level, right? That are seem like a single thing, like a single object, rather than something that's built out of all these different little components. And so now you have the Mini and the iMac and the new MacBook Pros that all have this very similar aesthetic in the way they're designed, and it's become even more cohesive to my mind in the way that they look and feel, and the way that they operate. So it shows a lot of focus on a lot of cohesion on the part of their Mac product line that we've seen from something like the iOS product line. So these are all things that we talk a little bit at times about the idea of things coming back to the Mac, and I think you look at all the improvements that we've seen in the entire Mac line, and there's a lot of influence of iOS without saying, hey, we're going to make these iOS devices.
So let's move to the lightning round with some of these reader questions.
How many points are they worth?
This is the category of questions I call, hey, where was this thing that Apple didn't announce at this thing?
Well,
where they announced
we can talk
things.
About all sorts of things that didn't happen.
Why no iTunes? Jean-Paul Robertson
already
would
announced
like to
it.
Know.
Already announced it at the last event.
And
said it would ship in October. It's not the end of
sometime
October
next
yet.
Week.
I bet you it'll ship soon.
Mm-hmm. And Caleb Barker would like to know, hey, what about where's that new Mac Pro we were promised?
Tim Cook already said that Mac Pro users would have a very nice surprise for them in 2013.
And it is not
2013. And it's not 2013 yet.
It's not even the end of October, as we've already established.
Yes.
So were there any missing things for you guys?
I was I think it was kind of a long shot, but I was really kind of looking forward to an iWork update. And, you know, we did at one point hear from Apple, like, oh, hey, we just updated iWorks to use Document in the Cloud. I'm like, yeah, and that was pretty much it. And it's still iWorks 09.
As we established, the last time Apple updated iWork.
It was the last Macworld Expo.
It was at Macworld Expo.
Phil Schiller handled that key.
Yeah. And iWork got a lot of attention today. It was mentioned several times in terms of.
It was just nothing.
And there's – and it's – yeah, it's kind of languished. It's really
It's there, but they clearly don't want to.
They put their flag in the sand, but they're kind of like, all right, now we're just going to leave that alone for now.
And now the tide has come in, and
water's getting a little higher on that flag.
They did make some book announcements, right? There's going to be there's an updated version of the iBooks app on iOS. Still no iBooks for Mac, which makes me sad. And iBooks Author also got an update with some stuff, so you can make iBooks Author-y things.
Although I couldn't tell
only books for
right. Do they actually say it would support the iPhone? Because I knew that was one strange.
They did not
absence.
Say that. Yeah,
everyone in the room is shaking their heads, listeners.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. But but there were some iBooks announcements, and I think the continuous scrolling mode on iBooks is going to be – some people are going to really like that.
On the iPad mini, especially on the iPad mini. That's going to be really nice.
And really on the iPhone too. If you want to – if you would rather just keep scrolling instead of like having to flip page after page after page, I think you'll –
I like to read all my books on scrolls.
That's good. You're old school. Rolling.
Mm.
Yeah, papyrus.
Mm. I like it.
Yeah.
Anything missing for you, Jason? Anything you were expecting that didn't come to pass?
No, I think they did much more than I expected to come to pass, really. With all the Mac announcements, it was nice to see so much. We were joking that maybe they would get there and go, suckers, all we got is Mac stuff today.
No iPad mini for but, you.
Who would release an iPad mini?
You guys are crazy.
Fools talk.
There was that moment where Phil Schiller said...
you knew there'd be something with mini in it at this presentation.
As he announced the Mac mini. Mm-hmm. I groaned.
No Apple television.
No iPhone 6.
Shocker. Hey, they introduced the iPad. Windows are getting smaller. 6 months between iPad updates.
It's so
pretty
good.
Soon, every 2 weeks, we're going to have a new iPhone.
It's the Mozilla Firefoxification of Apple's
hardware. The Chrome version numbering system.
It's so good to see all the Mac announcements, though. It's nice. And people lose sight of the fact that the Mac – I said this in our live blog today. People lose sight of the fact that the Mac is a growing, thriving, and important business to Apple. It's not the percentage of Apple's business that it used to be. And if you look at a chart that's based on percentages, it'll look like the Mac is going down. But if you look at a chart based on revenues, you can see the Mac is going up. And then if you plot that against the PC market, you'll see that the Mac is the only thing going up. So the Mac is, the Mac is healthy. It is successful. It's growing. The other PC makers are having a hard time. And it's, we lose sight of that. So it was nice to see the Mac get its moment in the spotlight, even if it was one of those things where it's like, everybody come, there's going to be a new iPad. But first, the Mac.
The Mac was like the opening band that you come to finish up so we can get the main.
Yeah, we could have come in an hour later.
Yeah, but I think it's, they do a Mac event every couple of years, right? We had the Back to the Mac event, 2 years ago, I think, where they introduced Lion. And every once in a while they do that, and they're like, "Hey, we haven't forgot about the Mac. We're still doing stuff." And so I think it's
The charts and graphs do not lie, Dan. They do not lie. The Mac is doing great.
I don't know how to read. I think that it's important to remember that
They're number one, right?
They do great work, and the Mac might not be on quite the same level of like breakneck pace that the iPad and the iPhone are because those are newer products. The Mac is much more mature as a line.
I have nothing further to say on this podcast, except to thank you, Jason Snell, and you, Dan Morin, for all your fine work and insights today.
Thanks, Phil.
Thank you, listeners, for all your fine questions and for listening. And we'll be back next week, I'm sure, to discuss other matters of interest and import. Until then, take care.